You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. And it is kind of fun that that's the intro music for my mom. But we have on the line with us a good friend of the show. I wanted to reach out to Yenny Alvarez, who is one of my best friends and a successful actress, voiceover artist, and just all-around savvy businesswoman. She knows how to make things happen. But Yenny, you started out life in a, when you tell people where you're from originally, I'll bet there are a lot of questions. Where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Santa Clara, Villa Clara, Cuba.
Cuba. And,
yes.
And how strange has today been since President Obama is the very first president to visit in nearly half a century? Nearly a century.
I have a lot of mixed emotions watching that man on TV land in Cuban soil. And my husband, Mark DiCarlo, taped it for me. And I could not believe when I saw it with my own eyes. And the first thing that he said, Obama tweeted, which, by the way, to me, it felt like he was tweeting to me alone, because there's a saying that only Cubans have. It's que bola. It's like, hey, how you doing? Only Cubans say that. That man did not get there and say, hello, my Cuban people. No. That's inside information. Que bola. That's slang. That's of the street. That's of the people. So that right there, it made me emotional that he knows what he's doing. I believe in him. I trust him. We have complete hope for something to happen, anything to happen. The Cubans in the island, I have it from very good sources that, you know, my friends call their parents, their grandparents, their cousins in Cuba, and they all have hope. Not only because it's been 88 years since this happened, but also because this is the one of the extremely few things they get to hear from the outside world.
Well, that's what I've been listening to today. And I think that we sort of hear what's going on in Cuba has become sort of background noise to a lot of Americans who are like, oh, yeah, I guess they have communism and they drive a lot of older cars because they don't get new ones and they just keep getting new parts. And I've heard something about the plumbing. And today I've been hearing a lot about just even movies and Wi-Fi. And, you know, and there are people who are saying that there are still political prisoners, that, you know, they're not answering questions, even though we have this whole contingent of, you know, diplomats going there, that there's still a lot being hidden. But you're saying this is hope for change.
Yeah, it can't be anything worse than what it's been the past few years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got to be something better. It's the face of hope.
Right. Because what is the alternative right now? To not have the president visit Cuba?
Yeah, to stay the same way that things have stayed for years. And, you know, you got to take a look at it like it's a difference. The Cuban people are not the Cuban government.
Right.
Cuban people want change. Cuban people want better for their country and for their people. Hopefully this will trickle down to the Cuban people and not just the elite and the president and then the dictator. I don't want to call him a president.
Castro, by the way.
Yeah.
Right.
Something, you know, hopefully the visit of our president will trickle down not only to the elite and to the dictatorship in Cuba, but also to the people.
And how old were you when your family decided to leave Cuba?
My family and I escaped when I was 9 years old.
So you didn't just leave?
You can't just leave and say, hey, I want a ticket here. No, you have to ask for permission. You have to pay people off. You have to hope that you have enough money time and time again, because they'll deny you. You can ask for a visa to a country. We were denied twice before the third one came around. We first asked to be to whatever country is in goods that year with Cuba. So at that time, the first time we asked was Spain. They said, nope, you're not allowed to go to Spain. Second one was Angola. They said no. And the third one was Panama. So when Panama came around, we packed like if we were going on vacation and we escaped the island.
Wow. And how old were you?
9.
You were 9 years old?
I was 9 years old, and I remember everything.
Wow. And was this something, how did your parents tell you that you were leaving Cuba? And did they tell you why you had to leave?
I was very sheltered.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you can't really say those things out
right.
loud in
right.
Cuba. You kind of have to hide them from, well, at least back then. You can't say anything against the government because then, you know, they'll send somebody to your house to find out what's going on. You can't have too many people at your house at one point without having permission from the president of the committee. Every block has a block captain that reports back to the city that reports back to the government. So it's like a tightly wound little web.
Wow.
So that's how they know, and that's how they keep people in line.
Right. I mean, and I guess you wouldn't want your children, how much can you share with your children and what you believe, no matter where you are in life?
Mm-hmm.
You can't share your honesty with them.
I knew last minute, and I almost messed it up because I was 9 years old, and I wanted to say goodbye to my friends in school, and I said it, and they put me in front of the classroom, and all the kids turned on me and started calling me names, and the teacher saved me and said, told the kids to shut up. They called me name. They called me gusano, which means worm.
Worm, okay.
Worm, and that was the name that they gave the people that left Cuba,
wow.
Like a traitor. And all the kids started yelling that out, and the teacher came in and, you know, shut them off and then sent me home and said, listen, don't say that again. And then the next morning we flew out. So I almost messed it up for my parents.
Wow. Well, and here's the thing. We really can't imagine what it's like. And, you know, you think of places that don't have access to so many things, but usually it's a result of economics. It's maybe religion, you know, cultural battles. But when it's communism, it's a stranglehold that affects every aspect of a person's development. And I can't even imagine what it's like right now, seeing the hope of possibly the end of that.
Well, for me, I was pretty much indoctrinated. Like, our salute to one another on the street when you're a kid and you're going to school and you're wearing your, you know, little uniforms, it was the response that Che Guevara, which, you know, the other horrendous killer, said. It was country, what is it, patria o muerte, venceremos? I have a friend of mine, Gustavo Rex, here, who's also a Cuban actor, and we've been talking about this all day. What was the Che Guevara thing? Patria o muerte?
Yeah.
Venceremos. Algo de eso.
Country, land, or death.
Oh.
We will triumph.
It was very similar to, I think it was Hitler or Mussolini who said, the state or death. And he Castro basically adopted that from them. As he adopted that term, worm, gusano, from Hitler, who used it against the Jews.
Oh. And what does it feel like today to see? I mean, I know that you said it looks like hope. Is there a sense that, like, why couldn't we do this sooner? What took so long? Or are you taking everything as it comes?
Well, you have to understand that Fidel Castro is one of the richest men in the world.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't need the United States. Now that he's old and feeble, I don't know where he's putting all that money. Raul Castro may be a different story. I have no idea. I don't trust them as far as I can throw them.
Mm-hmm.
We have the embargo with them, but the rest of the world doesn't. You know, they have everything there. They just keep it to themselves and they keep it to the elite. And now when this opens up, yeah, we're 90 miles away. And I'm hoping that, again, I hate to drive this down again, but I'm hoping that it does trickle down to the people. And seeing him land there, and the first thing he says is, que bola Cuba. That is insider information. That man knows. And he went over there to ask about the political prisoners. And Raul asked them, okay, so well, who are the political prisoners? Give me names. Well, you know what? We've given him names. There's lists all over the place. Then El Nuevo Herald tweeted out the list of 47 political prisoners in Cuba right now. And right before Obama landed, there was a riot, and the ladies in white, which are the mothers for political in Cuba, that their sons have been political prisoners or have died because of the dictatorship, they all lay down in the street and they were all arrested before Obama got there.
Wow.
So, you know what? Add those names to the list.
Right. Well, I'm looking at the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation.
I want to see his response.
Yeah, I agree, because and everyone who's curious, and actually we should all learn more, but there's a memorial, the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, which the numbers are astounding. An estimated 73,000 people have been killed since Fidel Castro seized power in 1959. And, you know, this is something that has to happen, and it's taken us a long time. There must be frustration still. I mean, and relief and yet still frustration, you know, but... If, like you said, the door is opening. Yeni,
yeah.
Do you have plans to go to Cuba?
Nope.
No.
I do not.
I know, because I've heard your husband say many times that he would like to go. And
I understand that. And it is a beautiful country. And old Havana, as dilapidated as it is, still has that nostalgia of you know, old colonial buildings. I mean, to me, it looked like Paris. In every corner, there was a little park. And you go into the old perfume house from the 1800s, and you still see, you know, the glass walls. And it's absolutely beautiful. And as a tourist, you can enjoy it. It's not a vacation for me, because I can't buy a bottle of perfume, because that money needs to go to my family. I can't buy an amazing work of art that I fell in love with, because that money needs to go for food.
Right, right.
So I don't enjoy it as a traveler would. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. I'm sorry. And let us know again. I'm sorry, I lost your name. What was...
Gustavo. Here's an interesting...
Hey, Gustavo. Yes.
We don't really know why Obama did this. You know, we don't think, at least I don't think, he did it for the Cuban people. Some say cynically that he did it for his legacy. Others say he did it because American business was chomping at the bits to try to get in there and do business, understandably so. But one thing that we have to remember for American businesses going in there, and I would love for them to do it, because if you go to Cuba and see the conditions that it's in, you would just cry, is that Cuba is the only country along with North Korea that does not allow foreign investment companies to pay labor outright. So what happens is that Cuba, North Korea will do business with you. They will charge you an amount of money for the workers that you're going to use in those countries, and then the Cubans turn around and pay the workers like 10% of that amount in Cuban pesos, which is virtually usable, considering that there's a two-currency economy, and all of the consumer goods are sold in this, it's called a CUC, a convertible...
CUC.
Yeah, CUC. So it's very difficult for everyday Cubans to purchase, things that you and I take for granted here. So that's something that is going to be at the forefront of difficulties when American companies start doing business and hiring labor in Cuba. And I hope that the AFL-CIO steps in and says, you know, absolutely not. There are four, I don't know what you call them, articles in the United Nations International Labor Agreement, blah, 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 that the Cuban government is violating in regards to its treatment of labor vis-a-vis, its state capitalist agencies and, foreign companies that do business there. And there are a lot of them from all over the world.
Well, and I can't even wrap my mind around what the impact will have if the AFL and the CIO if they're able to, carry over any labor practices, considering how strong the efforts seem to be right now, state to state, to weaken unions. So, it'll be interesting to see what their abilities are on foreign land with businesses that want to invest there. We are talking to Yeni Alvarez and Gustavo.
Gustavo, right?
Hey, Gustavo. We're all talking about the president's trip to Havana, Cuba today, and the future of Cuba. So hold on the line. Can you hold on for another segment, Yeni and Gustavo?
Sure.
If you have any questions, if you want to join the conversation, listeners, please feel free to do so. You can text or call 312-981-7200. We have two experts on the line about Cuba. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And I am joined on the line by Yeni Alvarez and Gustavo Rex. And we're talking about the president's trip to Havana, Cuba today. And, you know, we can't imagine, Yeni, what it's like to grow up. And you were very young when you left, but you have such strong memories of what it was like to grow up in Cuba. Here's something I learned when I visited you last, was even your name reflects the control that the government had on everyone's life in every aspect. Tell me a little bit about your name, Yeni.
Well, the name Yeni, Y-E-N-I, my mother was in love with this Italian singer, Jenny Luna. Mm-hmm. And she wanted to name me Jenny, but they said no because it was against the revolution to give me an American name.
Ugh. And it's just that's beyond imagination that you could tell someone they can't name their child because it sounds too American. It threatens.
Yeah, well, that's a whole. All these other Cubans, Yeni, Jackie, Johnny, my entire family is filled with Y names.
In the 60s, in the beginning of the revolution, in order to impose his power on the people. He outlawed anything that had to do with democracy, capitalism, Western-style culture. So if you wore long hair or wore bell-bottoms, you were arrested, and they would cut your hair right there on the street.
Wow.
You couldn't listen to rock and roll music, or you'd be arrested. You know, anything, and you couldn't even, and this is all, you know, people that I've met throughout the years who told me this, you couldn't even exhibit bourgeois attitudes like opening the door for someone. That was considered a bourgeois act.
Oh, really?
And it was not what Castro wanted. He and Che Guevara wanted to, you know, instill these egalitarian principles where everybody was equal, and so nobody could.
Like animal farm.
Yeah, like
all pigs
farm.
Are equal, but some pigs are more equal than others.
Yeah. So you couldn't do anything extra for someone else. Everybody, you know, had to open up their own door and stuff like that. Just crazy, crazy. And if you had someone who came to clean your house during the day, you know, your school friends would call you bourgeois, and they'd call you counter-revolutionary. Because I had a friend who had the parents had a woman who cleaned the house and made the meals during the day.
Wow. Well, and here's the thing is that, you know, we were talking before the break about, you know, whether or not the president's arrival, and he's brought along a lot of whether it's diplomats or executives, you know, we've talked about how will there be an investment and will there be jobs created in Cuba? But you were saying before the break that, you know, what will that mean for, you know, the workers? If they're going to pay them through the government, it's going to be the same thing, just with more money coming in for those who are benefiting at the expense of citizens.
And that's what's been happening with all the European and Latin American and Canadian companies that have been investing in Cuba since Cuba opened its doors, basically, after the fall of the Soviet Union, like back in the early 90s was when it started. But the other thing that nobody knows is that Cuba is one of the greatest debtor nations in the world. They owe up to like $11 billion to international lending institutions and countries, and they don't pay. And what's been happening is that these countries, in order to continue investing in Cuba, they have to slash the monies that are owed to them by the Cuban government in half. Like the Paris Club just slashed, you know, half of $1 billion, or I don't know how many hundreds of millions of dollars. And the Russians did the same thing. Mexico did it. Chile did it. I don't know about the Chinese, but everyone, in order to get a foot in the door, has to absolve Cuba of the money that Cuba owes them. Let's see what happens with the American businesses.
Wow.
And you know, Americans don't pussyfoot around. You know, if you don't pay what you're owed, you know, they come at you. And so it's going to be a real sore spot in the future if, you know, because I up to this point, Cuba receives medical supplies and grains and chicken and all kinds of stuff from the U.S. sends these things to Cuba, but they have to pay up front in cash.
Well,
so
it's gonna...
now, if they're allowed to have credit, that's where the problems are going to start. If the Cubans do the same thing that they're doing to the rest of the world by not paying these loans.
Well, hopefully it is a step in the right direction. And as Yenny mentioned earlier, it's a sign of hope. I have to run right now. Yenny, Gustavo, it's been lovely talking to you.
Thank you.
We'll check in with you again and see what develops in the next few weeks.
Sure.
Looking forward to it.
More after this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Of course. Bye. I love you. Talk to you later.